Usually, when we talk about pushing the boundaries of modern technology, there is this underlying assumption that the solutions, they have to be just as incredibly complex as the problems
Oh,
themselves.
absolutely. I mean, the tech industry certainly operates on this expectation of massive scale, right? We've basically been conditioned to assume that any forward progress requires, well, more hardware, vastly more processing power, and just increasingly intricate layers of math.
Yeah, the general rule of thumb seems to be that if you are trying to solve a $1 billion AI problem, you need a $1 billion supercomputer and a whole team of rocket scientists to pull it off.
Right, which is why today's topic is so refreshing.
Exactly. Today, we are exploring a fascinating technical deep dive that completely flips that entire assumption on its head. We are looking at this ridiculously simple, out-of-the-box method to shrink massive AI models down to a fraction of their size.
And, the real kicker here is what you don't need to pull this off.
Right. There is no new hardware required. There is no complex, no expensive retraining of the model. It is merely a clever combination of two well-known techniques that takes, less than 100 lines of Python code to implement.
Which is wild. It serves as an incredibly elegant solution to a very modern, very frustrating logistical problem.
So whether you are an AI developer actively trying to figure out how to deploy a massive model to a user's device, or you are just someone fascinated by how overwhelmingly complex tech problems sometimes have these incredibly simple, almost magical solutions, this deep dive is going to give you a massive aha moment.
It really is a game changer.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get to the magic trick itself, we have to establish why we even need a trick in the first place, right? We need to talk about the bottleneck of big AI.
Right, and the bottleneck is severe, and it's growing exponentially worse every few months. Deep neural networks are just ballooning in size.
They really are.
I mean, if you look at a standard GPT-2 model, which is actually considered relatively modest by today's frontier standards,
Yeah.
it still takes up hundreds of megabytes of space on a hard drive.
Which creates a massive headache for storage and transmission. Like, if you want to de deploy artificial intelligence on a mobile device, or maybe bake it into an embedded system in a smart appliance, or operate in an environment where internet bandwidth is really constrained, you hit a hard wall.
You hit a very hard wall, yeah.
Imagine you are trying to bring a fully assembled grand piano into a tiny studio apartment.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Right. You have this beautiful, incredibly complex instrument that is our neural network, and you want to put it in your living room, but the front door is only 3 feet wide. You simply cannot shove a grand piano through a normal door without taking it apart.
Exactly. And the grand piano in this scenario is made up of what we call the weights of the neural network. As these models become more capable, they require more parameters. Hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of parameters.
Just a staggering amount of data.
Right. And traditionally, every single one of those weights is stored in the computer's memory as a 32-bit floating point number.
Okay, wait, let's break down that specific term for a moment for anyone who might not know. Why does a 32-bit floating point number make the piano so heavy in the first place?
Well, a 32-bit floating point number is essentially a way for a computer to represent decimals with an extremely high level of precision. It gives you about 7 decimal digits of accuracy.
Wow.
But
Okay.
storing that level of detail requires 4 bytes of memory for every single number. So if your neural network has 1 billion parameters, that means you are using 4 billion bytes, 4 gigabytes, just to store the math that makes up the AI's brain.
And when you are trying to push that over a standard cellular network to a user's phone, those gigabytes become a massive roadblock.
Exactly. You just can't fit it through the door.
So we have a massive, heavy 32-bit grand piano. How does the source material propose we fold it up to fit through the door? This brings us to the two-stage compression pipeline.
Right, stage one.
Stage one is something called lossy uniform quantization, which, it sounds intimidating, but the mechanics are surprisingly straightforward, right?
They really are. The first step in our shrinking process involves taking that highly precise 32-bit floating point tensor, which you can visualize as a mass grid of numbers, and finding the absolute minimum and maximum values within it.
Okay, so you find the ceiling and the floor.
Exactly. Once you isolate those two extremes, you scale everything in between them, into just 256 distinct levels.
Oh, wow. So you are taking nearly infinite decimal possibilities and forcing them into exactly 256 standardized boxes, like turning a perfectly smooth ramp into a staircase that only has 256 steps.
That is a perfect analogy, yeah. Right. Mathematically, 256 levels can be perfectly represented by an 8-bit unsigned integer.
Ah.
So instead of each weight taking up 4 bytes to store a long, complex decimal, it now takes up just 1 byte to store a simple whole number between 0 and 255.
That's a huge drop.
It is. You have instantly reduced the raw storage size of the entire model by a factor of 4.
Okay, wait, I have to push back on this. If the very first step is literally labeled lossy and we are throwing away all that incredible microscopic decimal precision, doesn't that inherently make the AI, less intelligent?
It's a fair question.
How can we just round off the AI's brain, force its nuanced thoughts into 256 boxes, and expect it to still work properly?
What's fascinating here is how it reveals the inherent robustness of neural networks. They do not usually rely on the microscopic exactness of a single isolated weight.
Oh, I see. It's more about the collective.
Precisely. The intelligence emerges from the overall pattern of millions of weights working in concert. The network can easily absorb the rounding error because the knowledge is distributed across the whole system.
So it barely even notices that some precision is gone.
Exactly. The impact of losing that decimal precision on the final output is vanishingly small. Furthermore, this lossy rounding step is exactly what sets the stage for the real magic in stage 2.
Right, because shrinking the model by 4 times is great, but that is not the 6.6 times reduction we promised at the start of this deep dive.
Not even close.
Stage 2 is where we introduce a tool called ZLIB. This is the lossless compression stage.
Right, so we take that brand new stream of 8-bit integers, those numbers from 0 to 255 we just made, and we run the entire sequence through the ZLIB compression library at its maximum setting, which is known as level 9.
And ZLIB is pretty old school, right?
It is. The ZLIB library is a classic piece of software that uses a combination of two specific algorithms, LZ77 sliding window compression and Huffman coding.
Okay.
Running the quantized data through this process yields another 30 to 40% reduction in size, completely on top of the initial quantization.
Okay, we definitely need to demystify LZ77 and Huffman coding so we understand the mechanics here. Why does ZLIB work so exceptionally well on this specific type of data?
The efficiency comes directly from the patterns created during the quantization step. Remember, we just forced millions of weights into 256 discrete boxes.
Right, the staircase.
Yes. In a neural network, adjacent weights often change very slowly, or they share the exact same quantized value. This creates long, repetitive runs of identical bytes.
So you just have chunks of the exact same number over and over.
Exactly. LZ77 is a sliding window algorithm that looks back at the data it just processed and recognizes when it has seen an exact sequence of numbers before.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. Instead of writing that sequence out again, it just writes a tiny pointer back to the previous occurrence. It thrives on long runs of identical bytes.
It is basically the digital equivalent of saying ditto instead of writing a full sentence out for the second time.
That's exactly it. Then you apply Huffman coding on top of that. In our quantized data, the numbers are not spread out evenly. Many weights naturally cluster right around the center of the distribution, close to zero.
Okay, so it's a bell curve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huffman coding exploits this clustering by assigning very short binary codes to the most common numbers and longer binary codes to the rarer numbers.
Oh, that is just like Morse code. The letter E is used constantly in the English language, so it is assigned a single quick dot. But Q is relatively rare, so it gets a longer, more complex sequence of dashes and dots.
Huffman coding acts as a digital Morse code tailored specifically for the statistical distribution of the data it is compressing.
That is so clever.
It really is. So between LZ77 replacing repeating patterns with pointers and Huffman coding assigning the shortest possible labels to the most common numbers, ZLIB is able to pack that data incredibly tight.
What blows my mind about this entire pipeline is how little extra baggage is required to make the whole thing work. The metadata overhead, the set of instructions you need to save so you can unpack the data later, is microscopic.
It's almost nothing. To decompress this back into a functioning AI model, you only need to retain a few specific variables.
Like what?
Well, you need the original shape of the tensor so the computer knows how to reconstruct the grid. You need the minimum and maximum values we found during stage 1, which is just 2 numbers, taking up 8 bytes.
Okay, 8 bytes is tiny.
Right. You need the number of quantization levels, which is 256. And you need a tag identifying the original data type. That's it.
Wow. So for a 100 megabyte tensor of weights, all those decompression instructions combined add up to less than 0.01% overhead.
It's wildly efficient.
The mathematical theory is incredibly elegant. The grand piano has been sawed into tiny labeled pieces and boxed up efficiently. But theory is one thing.
Right, practice is another.
Exactly. What happens when you actually test this script out in the real world on a massive language model? Does the piano still play music when you put it back together?
Well, we move from a neat theoretical trick to undeniable proof in the testing phase. The researchers validated this two-stage pipeline on two vastly different architectures.
Like, what was the first one?
First, they used a tiny MNEST multilayer perceptron. It's a very basic foundational image classification model, originally sitting at about 340 kilobytes in size.
So just a tiny test subject to make sure the code actually compiles and runs.
Exactly. They then scale the test up to a Hugging Face Distilled 2 model. This is an 82 million parameter natural language model, and its original size on disk was a hefty 353 megabytes.
A proper, fully-fledged AI model that can generate text. The results of applying the script to both are stunning. For the tiny 340 kilobyte image classifier and the massive 353 megabyte language model, they achieved an identical compression ratio of about 0.15.
Which represents an 85% reduction in storage size across the board. The Distilled 2 model shrank from 353 megabytes down to just 53.8 megabytes.
Here's where it gets really interesting. They took entirely different architectures, performing completely different tasks at completely different scales, and the compression ratio was identical.
It's completely consistent.
It proves that the underlying redundancy patterns in AI, weights those clusters, and repeating sequences that SLIB loves to eat up are a universal property across different types of neural networks.
Yeah, the physical footprint was clearly solved, but the critical metric is output fidelity. Did the lossy quantization fundamentally break the model's logic?
Right, because if it's broken, it doesn't matter how small it is.
Exactly. So to measure this scientifically, they calculated the mean squared error between the original model's raw output predictions, which are known as the logits, and the decompressed model's logits.
Let's translate those terms for anyone listening who isn't a machine learning engineer. Logits are the raw, unnormalized scores that AI generates before it turns them into final probabilities, right?
Correct.
And mean squared error, or MSE, is essentially a measurement of the distance between the uncompressed model scores and the compressed model scores.
Spot on. And the MSE in this experiment was an absurdly low 2.34 times 10 to the negative 5.
Wow.
Yeah. To add to that, the cosine similarity between the two outputs was 0.99998.
Cosine similarity is a great metric to visualize. If you imagine the AI's prediction as an arrow pointing toward a specific concept in space, a cosine similarity of 1.0 means the two arrows are perfectly overlapping, pointing in the exact same direction.
And a score of 0.99998 means they are, for all practical purposes, entirely parallel.
The decompressed model's internal math is virtually indistinguishable from the original.
It's nearly identical.
But, you know, numbers and vectors are one thing, but actual words are the ultimate test for a language model. The researchers ran a greedy decoding text generation test.
Which is the true test, yes.
They gave both the original 353 megabyte model and the decompressed 53 megabyte model the exact same prompt. The prompt was, the future of artificial intelligence is...
A highly appropriate prompt for the context.
Definitely.
And greedy decoding is a method where the AI simply picks the single most probable next word over and over again. It is a very strict test, because even a microscopic change in the underlying probabilities could cause the AI to pick a different word.
And if it picks one different word?
It sends the rest of the sentence spiraling off in a completely different direction.
Exactly. So the original uncompressed model spat out, the future of artificial intelligence is not yet clear. A little pessimistic, but grammatically perfect.
Yeah.
The decompressed model, the one that had its brain rounded off and squished through SLIB, spat out, the future of artificial intelligence is not yet clear. But it is possible that the future of artificial intelligence will be a result of the development of artificial intelligence.
The first sentence generated is entirely identical. Not a single character changed, despite an 85% reduction in the storage of the weights.
It just kept generating text after that first sentence.
Right. Because of the fragile nature of greedy search algorithms, the tiny microscopic mathematical differences eventually caused it to generate an extra token, and once it did, it just kept talking.
But what is so deeply impressive is that the continuation remained entirely semantically coherent. It didn't devolve into random gibberish or hallucinate strange characters. It kept making philosophical sense.
The coherence of that output, proves the method works out of the box for practical generation tasks. It preserves the model's behavior without breaking its logic.
That's incredible.
You can compress the model, ship it across a highly constrained cellular network to a user's device, decompress it locally, and trust that it will still generate highly accurate language.
Okay, if the results are this identical, if we can shrink models by 85% with basically zero loss in practical quality, we have to ask the obvious question. What is the catch?
There's always a catch.
Right. Why isn't every single software engineer doing this by default, and how does it compare to all the other advanced compression methods out there? We need to ground the excitement with the practical trade-offs.
Of course. Every engineering choice involves a trade-off. This raises an important question regarding what we're actually optimizing for when we deploy an AI.
Right.
This specific two-stage method does not reduce inference time or runtime memory unless you build a specialized system around it.
Break down what that means for a developer trying to use this in the real world.
It means this Python script will not make the AI think faster, and it will not allow a massive model to run on a cheap computer that doesn't have enough RAM to hold the full-sized model.
Oh.
You have to fully decompress the model before the computer can actually run it. The decompression phase only takes a few seconds, which is very fast. But once it is unpacked, the model is restored back to its full 32-bit floating point size in the system's active memory.
Okay, so it acts as a godsend for storage and transmission. It is the perfect tool for getting the grand piano through the tiny front door.
Exactly.
But once it is inside the apartment and you unpack it to play a song, it expands back to full size and takes up the whole living room anyway.
That's the perfect way to put it. If you want true runtime memory reduction, you would need a highly complex custom system that decompresses the weights continuously on the fly during the actual inference process.
Which this basic script doesn't do.
Right. This basic 100-line script doesn't do that.
Yeah.
However, if your only problem is getting the model onto a phone's hard drive over a 4G network without eating up the user's data plan, this is flawless.
There is also a quirky technical detail in the code regarding something called tide weights.
Oh, yes. In architectures like GPT-2, the input embedding layer, which is the mechanism the model uses to turn readable text into math, and the output head, which is how it turns math back into text, often share the exact same set of weights.
So they use the same part of the brain.
Exactly. They are tied together because translating a word to a concept should theoretically be the exact reverse of translating a concept to a word.
Okay, but if the compression script doesn't know they are sharing the same brain cells, it might try to compress and decompress them as two totally independent things, which would break the linkage.
And you don't want that. So the decompression routine includes a specific manual workaround to detect that relationship. It explicitly copies the decompressed input embedding over to the output head to ensure the shared relationship remains perfectly intact.
That makes sense. Let's look at the broader landscape of AI compression now. The source material compares this 8-bit plus lib method to other advanced, highly researched techniques.
It does, yes.
Like 4-bit quantization, for instance, achieves an even better compression ratio, hitting about 0.125. Another method called pruning plus Huffman, sometimes referred to in the industry as deep compression, hits a ratio of 0.10 to 0.15.
Which are very impressive numbers.
Yeah. If those techniques result in smaller files, why is our simple 8-bit method such a big deal?
Well, this highlights the crux of the paper's value proposition. Those other methods, like aggressive 4-bit quantization and deep compression, almost always mandate a retraining or fine-tuning phase.
Oh, the retraining.
Yeah. After you shrink the network, you have to put the model back into a heavy computational training environment, feed it massive amounts of data, and update its gradients to teach it how to be smart again.
And retraining a language model is incredibly expensive, immensely time-consuming, and requires access to expensive server clusters.
Not to mention, you might not even have the data to retrain it.
Right. If you are an independent developer who just downloaded an open-source model off the internet, you don't have access to the terabytes of proprietary data it was originally trained on.
Exactly. So the massive defining advantage of this 8-bit uniform quantization plus lib method is that it requires absolutely zero retraining. It is entirely a post-training operation.
That is huge.
You download the model, run the Python script on your laptop, and within seconds, you have a compressed model ready to distribute.
The documentation also touches on some potential extensions. It addresses the obvious question. Why not just combine the more aggressive 4-bit quantization with ZLIB to get the best of both worlds?
You can theoretically combine them, but the results are not as magical. When you crush the numbers down to 4-bit, you only have 16 discrete levels instead of the 256.
Right.
The resulting index stream actually becomes less redundant in the specific way that zlib exploits, so the added benefit of the lossless compression diminishes significantly.
Just diminishing returns at that point.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to push the boundaries further, you could look at per-channel quantization, which compresses each individual output channel of the tensor independently.
Does that add overhead?
It adds a tiny bit more metadata, yeah, but it can improve the mathematical fidelity even further. Or you could swap out zlib for a more modern adaptive dictionary compressor like STD.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Let's bring all these threads together. If you are a practitioner, a software developer, or just someone experimenting with distributing neural network weights to end users, this script represents the ultimate low-effort, high-reward logistical trade-off.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it highlights a crucial distinction in the philosophy of modern computing.
How so?
Well, if you are executing pure scientific computing, simulating fluid dynamics for an aerospace company, or calculating quantum mechanics, you demand perfect, bit-for-bit, lossless precision at every step.
Right, there is no room for error there.
Exactly. But for deep learning inference, the neural network is remarkably resilient. The impact of this compression method on actual practical accuracy is entirely negligible. You gain a massive logistical benefit for almost zero functional cost.
To quickly summarize the mission of this entire deep dive, we explored a tested method for shrinking massive AI models by 6.6 times, taking an 85% chunk out of their storage footprint using basic 8-bit uniform quantization combined with a classic zlib compression trick.
And all of it achieved in under 100 lines of Python code, completely sidestepping the need to retrain the model.
It serves as a genuine masterclass in applying established, deeply understood tools to solve cutting-edge, wildly complex problems.
Absolutely.
That leads perfectly into a final, provocative thought we want to leave you with today. If you look closely at the references in the documentation, the zlib compression library we keep praising was created by Jean-Loup Gailly and Mark Adler all the way back in 1995.
Nearly 30 years ago, long before modern deep learning even existed.
Here is a lingering idea to mull over as you go about your week. If a data compression algorithm written in 1995 is the secret weapon to democratizing the distribution of cutting-edge, massive, multi-million parameter neural networks in 2026.
Oh, I see where you're going.
What other ancient algorithms are just sitting around in old textbooks waiting to be dusted off to solve tomorrow's most complex computational bottlenecks?
It proves that highly elegant math truly does not have an expiration date.
It really doesn't. Sometimes the most effective way to move a massive grand piano into a tiny apartment isn't to invent a futuristic new crane.
Right.
It is to realize the piano has hinges built in 1995 that let you simply fold it up and put it in your pocket. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the complex solutions, keep exploring the simple ones, and we will catch you next time.